ESPN 107.3 presents Wild at Heart, bringing outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, powered by Cowtown USA, Cold Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, and Trout and Sons. Now, Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM in the pulse of the Ozarks, beautiful Rolla, Missouri. I'm your host, Tommy Bench. Jerry Cook is my co-host, and John Francis is our radio engineer. Welcome to Wild at Heart. We're your red-blooded Americans who remember and cherish our outdoor heritage. We love America and support the Second Amendment. We stand for our national anthem, say please and thank you, and open doors for the ladies. We hunt, fish, trap, shoot, float, camp, and explore in God's country, the Missouri Ozarks, right out your back door, and occasionally a few points beyond. Join us each Wednesday at 4 p.m. right here on ESPN 107.3, or catch us Sundays at 8 a.m. or anytime online at ESPN1073.com. This segment of Wild at Heart is brought to you by J. Cook Fly Rods, custom fly rods plus everything you need for fly fishing, located in downtown St. James. We're starting off the show here with a very special guest. I guess I call him special. He's very close to me. He's my fishing partner and a good buddy of mine. And Seth, welcome to the show. So Seth Turner's on the show, and like I said, he's my partner and good friend. And we fish all our tournaments together. And that's one thing. The main reason why I wanted him on the show is because of all the stories and the comments and the things that I say on Facebook and social media, Instagram, whatever it is. It's kind of vague sometimes. Well, now you're going to get to hear all the stories behind all these fish tales. So the truth. Wait,
are we going to hear the truth now or the stories?
Well, here's what I like to what I like to prefer to it. You know, when I talk about this kind of stuff, you got the good, the bad, and the ugly. So you're going to get all three right here, but we're going to get the good, bad, and the ugly because we've got all three. We've had some good times, some bad times, some ugly times, but we've had a lot of success together. We've been on both ends of the net and the rod, both of us, and we'll talk about that. You know, we'll talk about, you know, how we fish and the truth behind it. So if, you know, you guys really want to know how we really fish, what we really use, we're going to keep each other honest right here in this segment. And then this whole show, you know, we got the whole show with as well as Jerry Cook. And we're going to be talking multiple different things. But anyway, let's start off the show with the big bass. There was a big bass caught that I don't think was ever put on the radio. There was a big bass caught on the Osage River. And I say it was caught. I'm not going to tell you who caught it, who landed, but that's why you got to stick around and listen to the story. But what happened is Seth and I was fishing the Osage tournament, and we put in at St. Thomas, right?
Yep, St. Thomas.
Yeah, we put in at St. Thomas, and all them guys were like, oh, we're running to the dam. We're going to win this tournament. We're running to the dam. Well, we thought about it, and I told Seth, I said, man, we really need to go to the dam. We don't have enough fuel. It's a problem. The only way to make it to the dam and back from St. Thomas with our 19-gallon fuel cell was to load up a bunch of extra fuel. Well, we don't have room for all this extra fuel, as well as our tackle. And, you know, just so we was trying to decide what to do. I think we ended up taking some extra fuel. But we still never made it to the dam.
Yeah, Tommy, if I can comment here, man, that's one advantage of fishing with a drift boat.
Is making it to the dam, I guess?
No. No fuel required.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I float. I float a lot. Of course, that's because of the sections of the river that I live on are very narrow and shallow, you know, a lot of shallow shoals. But bottom line is we fished the Osage, and we were way out of our element. So I'll rewind a little bit. So Seth and I started fishing, you know, back in 14 was the first time I'd ever fished a Bell Chute.
I think
A Walmart tournament with my neighbor. Anyway, so you know, we've become to know each other really well, clear water conditions on the Gasconade. That's where the majority of our tournaments are, like literally all the tournaments. I know that, like, the Merrimack Bass Club, they were somebody was talking about earlier this year, somebody was commenting about the Upper Merrimack Bass Club has all their tournaments everywhere except the Merrimack.
There's not many Merrimack tournaments, really.
Yeah, they're all on the Osage, a few on the Gasconade, and here and there and everywhere except for the Merrimack. Anyway, well, over the years, we've struggled with muddy water conditions. I don't know about you, Jerry, but how do you do when you're fly fishing? You got high, muddy water. Do you not fish? Do you know how to fish for them? What do you do?
You fish, man, regardless, unless it's just blown out. But usually darker water, darker fly.
I'm talking about you can't see one inch down.
Yeah, a darker fly, you know, a darker water, darker fly. And if you're wading, say in the upper Merrimack or even the current river, you've got to be extremely careful because of the holes and the current.
Oh, yeah.
If you're in a drift boat, it can get to be real challenging on the Merrimack, on the upper Merrimack, because of the current. And so your guide spends more time on the oars than he does trying to spot fish because, let's face it, you're not going to spot fish anyway.
Well, no. Jerry, if you don't mind,
explain
this to me. I mean, as a mostly non-fisherman, darker water, darker fly seems counterintuitive. It seems like the darker water, you need a brighter colored fly for the fish to see.
One would think, but it doesn't seem to work that way.
Huh.
It's kind of like night fishing. You use the darker colors at night, too, instead of like white or something.
Because they see more of a silhouette.
More of a contrast.
It's more of a contrast thing. But you're right. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But what I'm talking about is when that water gets like solid chocolate milk, what we call chocolate milk,
right?
Those fish don't just sit there where they used to be. They move to certain locations unlike where they did before.
They're behind rocks or in undercut banks, someplace out of the fast current.
They're there anyway. Even in the clear water, for the most part, that's what a fish does because they're not going to fight that current their whole life.
No.
You know, so they'll sit behind a current break. You know, but when it gets under high, muddy water conditions, that's something that we're told. You know, we couldn't catch them. When we first had those conditions, we still fished it. There's a lot of guys that won't even fish it, you know, competitively. They're like, well, I can't figure them out, so they just don't fish. Him and I, we thought, well, we're going to figure out how to do it. We're going to figure out how to make ourselves an all-around great team, a great angler where we can catch them under any condition. So we did, and we've gotten better over it. But I guess the point of the story is, we were known for being really good with clear water conditions on the Gasconade. If it was clear water, there wasn't too many people that we wasn't confident we could compete with or was good with or better. But now we're fishing the Osage. We only fish the Osage, what, twice a year at the most?
Yeah, we haven't fished it much, and I haven't fished it much
once
at all
or twice
the last
a year.
Three
I don't
four
even
years.
Know it. This is literally the second time we'd ever fished it, I think. But We was doing well. We had a pattern going. We figured something out pretty quick. And, we caught a few. We lost a few good ones, too. But anyway, we was on to something. And I think you had hooked a fish around this location. Did you break off or did you just flat out missed it?
There was about a four-pound largemouth. See, we got up there, and as soon as we shut down, I looked down. I'm like, Tommy, I can see 6 foot. You know what's going to happen here.
Yeah.
Out come my, special bait.
Yeah.
The old pink trick worm.
The old pink trick worm turner. That's what they call him. They nickname him pink, or they didn't say pink. They just call him trick worm turner because that's what he likes to throw.
That's what I've heard. Trick worm. Anyhow, I think we caught a few, and then we went up to the next little spot, and there was a big chunk of concrete there, and I pitched up there, just passed it, twisted it a few times, and that big largemouth come out, grabbed that worm, and started to swim off. And I reeled down and do a sweeping hook set and just kind of pull into it. And I guess he had just had the tail, broke the worm off right behind
the
bend of the hook, and I did
now
not
remember.
Stick that fish.
Now I remember.
And
so,
I was my jaw was about laying on the boat deck floor, I think. But.
So he had seen this fish. He had literally seen this fish come up, eat the worm, had it in his mouth, swimming away. All you got to do is just get a good hook set, done the sweeping hook set, and it just ripped the worm in half because the hook was right here.
That don't happen often.
The hook was right outside of the mouth. Yeah, and it don't happen very often. So We go on thinking, okay, it was tough. It's a tough pill to swallow, but we're catching fish. We're fishing. You know, we're doing our thing. And, well, we come back. We fish upriver.
Caught one pretty nice one upriver.
Caught a good one. We had a pretty good day. But what I'm leading up to is what ends up happening. I mean, this is a story that you just won't believe. We don't even have enough time on this. That's why I have it for this whole show. But I'm telling you, this is an amazing story. And this is just the one fish story. But so we come back. We go upriver and we fish. And we catch some other fish the same technique, same way, and we go under different water conditions. As you move around, the water changes. It may be dirty here, cleaner here, depending on where you're at. So I'm throwing a buzzbait. I think I was throwing a buzzbait that day and spinnerbait. We catch them on a spinnerbait, buzzbait.
Yeah, I mean, you caught some on a jig.
Yeah, caught them on a jig. That's right, jig. That's another thing I was catching them on. Anyway, so we thought, we've got to go back to that spot. We're going to leave this fish alone and just let him rest, come back to him. So we did. Now, I think we had our limit, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a limit.
We had a limit of fish, but we knew what it was going to take to win. You basically know, okay, we're not going to win with what we have. We've got a limit of fish, but we don't have anything giant in there or anything that's just going to be spectacular. So we head back to that spot. Knowing what we just lost, knowing what's still there, because we didn't hook him, didn't stick him, didn't do anything, and I think if I remember correctly, Seth, didn't I have one blow up on a buzzbait that I completely missed? I can't remember, but we lost several good ones.
I could have swore
there was something that happened, or it come up and turned, and we were seeing it. Something happened to where we knew that was a great area. We needed to go back to that area because there was a couple giant fish in that area. So. That's where we're headed. We're headed back to that area, and we're going to catch these fish. That's the plan. You know, everyone, you got a plan. Now you just got to execute it. But before we tell the rest of the story, we got to go to a break. So stick around and to listen to this giant bass and the story and how it was caught. It's coming up in segment two. We'll talk more about this giant bass and how it was caught. So I'm Tommy Benson. This is Wild at Heart. We'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. This segment is brought to you by Cowtown USA, home of Can-Am ATVs and UTVs, located in Cuba, Missouri. We're back here with Trick Worm Turner. We're talking about the big largemouth caught on the Osage River in the tournament on the Gasco Osage Buddy Bassmasters. So, rewinding back to where we had fished this area out and learned kind of what these fish were after. We knew we had clear water. We knew we could do – that's kind of why I was talking about us thriving under clear water conditions. If we have clear water, we just thrive. We just – our tactics, you know, our way – the ways that we fish just really thrive for clear water. So anyway, so now we lost this fish, seen this fish. We lost several fish or missed them to where we knew we had the opportunities right there. So now we go upriver. Catch some other fish. We come back. Well, as soon as we get back, we start the same way we caught them before, the same way we missed them. You know, I'm throwing my buzz bait and pitching my jig around. And Seth throws that trick worm, that pink, weightless trick worm. Okay? Well, we can both see it. And we're watching, of course. He twitches it around. And just out of the depths of all this wood. Wood everywhere, wood crisscrossing, logs going this way, that way, trees here, treetops here. That's another reason why they were there. Them largemouth love all that wood. Here comes this big giant mouth, and it comes up, and all of a sudden the pink trick worm disappears. It's gone. Seth immediately knows. He says, "Oh my gosh, you know, giant!" And he sets the hook, sweeping set, and it's solid, and it's on. Now it's game on. So. I'm going to let Seth take over on what he remembers from there. After you set the hook, what do you remember after that?
Well, I knew it was a good one because I caught that one that was like 3.5 pounds before. Thought that was a good one.
Yeah.
Well, I knew this was another good one. And, you know, it kind of bulldogged a little bit, and then it took off on a run for the brush or root wad it had came out of. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I can't stop this fish. It's huge. That's when – and then
– Yeah, that's a problem. He's got light line, so you can relate to this, Jerry. He's got light line. He's got – you had a leader on, right?
It was 8 or 10-pound leader.
I think you have braid, but you have an 8 or – but you had 8 or 10-pound leader.
Clear fluorocarbon, yeah.
Right, okay, so carry on.
I'm the finesse guy here. He uses – I was giving him – I kid him because he uses rope, and I'm the finesse guy.
And I'm with you, Seth, okay?
Yeah. Anyhow, you know, that fish makes a good run, and then finally get it to put on the brakes a little bit, and then it, you know, I can tell it's starting to come to the surface, and it comes up and does a, you know, tail walks, and Tommy's instantly like, oh, my gosh, that's a six-pounder, five, six-pounder. And, you know, went back down. I'm hanging on, you know, trying to stop that fish. Well, I couldn't stop it, and it got into that root wad, and after a bit, you know, I couldn't stop anything.
So now guess what it's doing now? It's rewind a little bit. So it comes up completely out of the water. I see it. We both see it, and I'm usually a pretty good judge of how big a fish is, and I said it right away. I said, Seth, that's at least a 5 or 6 pounder. That's a 5 or 6 pounder, 5.5, 6 pounder. It went back under, went off. It's running to the brush. He can't stop it. He can't horse it because with his 8-pound line, 6 or whatever it was, it just break. Yep. You know what I mean? Because with the surge and pulling. So now it's in the trees. So go ahead, Seth. So now it's ran back in there in all that thick brush.
Yeah.
And
so it's wrapping around tree.
So it's in there and it's stuck.
Oh yeah, it's stuck. How many different directions it's went after it went this way. It may have went over here, then crossed over here, then went back over here. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
Yeah.
And so as we troll, we finally think the only option we have is to troll over there. Ease up to it because it's not coming out.
Yeah.
It's not. So we ease up to it, and that fish pulls. So you can see the line. Pull.
It's
and
still
the rod
on.
Bend. And then, so we know he's still on there, but the whole time, and then you're trying to pull back or keep tension, he don't want to give too much slack because if the hook isn't in the hard part of the mouth, if it's in a wallowed out spot, one little – you know, you give them any little slack and it may just come right out. So go ahead. So anyway, basically, we don't know where he's at. We're trying to figure out where this fish is at. There's trees going every which way. There's a big root wad over here to the left. And then we pull up to where the line's going in, basically in the middle of all this. Seth and I both think that this fish is to the left.
Trying to go out deeper.
Trying to go out in deep water because that's usually what them fish do. They run out to deep water, run structured. So we're looking. We're looking over and at, and he pulls. But all we see is the line going in the water, but we can't tell which direction it's going. But it seems like it's going off to the left where we come from. So this went on for
several minutes.
Several
It probably
minutes.
Wasn't as long as we thought it was.
Probably
but it
not,
like
but
forever.
It seemed like forever. We're sitting there.
It always seems longer when you're fighting something.
And we
like
knew
that.
It was a big fish. Yeah. This fish was literally like.
That's the biggest river bass I've ever landed.
It's on the it's huge.
By like a pound. So.
Okay. So anyway, so as we're looking, correct me if I'm wrong, because I may get excited and get a little overzealous here and start talking.
You never get excited.
Ooh. Anyway, so we see this fish. Well, we don't see the fish, but we see the line, and we think it's off to the left. And after a while, I'm thinking we're starting to almost give up, you know, to where it's like, should we just – it stops. Eventually, it stops pulling. There's no pulling. There's no tugging. That line's not pulling back. When you pull it, it just feels like you're wrapped 15 different ways, and it's just tight. You just – so we're almost to the point where we're like, all right, just break it. And I'm thinking, no, we can't break it, you know. And I think I even told him, Seth, no, don't break it. What do we got to lose? Let's follow this thing down. I don't care if I got to pull this brush pile up. I'll trace this line down and see where it's at. Well, for some reason or another, he sees something.
I see the worm.
You see the worm in the corner of his eye or something. He sees a worm, and he even says, there's one of the worms from before. I think you thought it was one that the fish bit off and regurgitated, spit it out. But it wasn't. It was
moved.
It was the real worm. It was the worm that fish had ate.
It had slid up the line.
It slid.
And it was pointing
that's
towards
exact,
the shallow
yeah,
water.
So now instead of being to the left or in the deep, this worm, this pink, bright pink trick worm, was over on the right towards the shallow part of it. So now we know, wait a second, this fish ain't where we thought. So I said, grab the net, or I think I grabbed the line, and I pulled it up, and I started pulling the line through all that stuff. I think I found out where it come out. Basically, I could see the line, and I reached down and grabbed the line that wasn't wrapped, you know, basically the line that led over to the pink worm just floating in the middle of nowhere. And I started pulling, not knowing if there was a fish.
You moved the fish a little bit or something, and it caught my eye.
As soon as the fish moved,
it's right there.
Yeah, I felt it pull two times. It just went boom, boom. It just pulled, you know, like it was like it was lifeless, but it had so much weight that it had a little bit of energy to say, I just still don't want to go. And, of course, I yelled, hey, get the net, and pulled that landline that basically all
right
at the boat.
Actually, we had to reach down and snag the line with a whopper flopper with
another
rod.
Right. We did. We had to. That's how we grabbed the line because it was deep enough we wasn't able to get down and grab the line. So basically, after all this, we ended up snagging the line with another lure. I grabbed the line and pulled this thing in with our hands after he'd fought it, wore it out, you know, and it went 15 different ways, netted it, ended up getting in the boat. I mean, it was the best story of our career. I mean, and here it was. It was definitely as big as we thought it was. It was a
543, I think.
543. So it was right at 5.5 pounds. So heck of a fish. One big bass, won the big bass of the year for that tournament trail. And pretty cool story, really, if you think about it, that, you know, it comes down the line. And we ended up winning. I think we took second.
Yeah, we still didn't win.
We still didn't win. Because all them guys went up to the dam up there right by Bagnell Dam and caught some big ones. But they're not even the ones that beat us, I don't think.
I forgot who
it was. It wasn't those two teams. I think the other team. I remember who it was. I just don't remember his name. But anyway, so there's one of the stories. There's one of our big bass of the year. And we got – that was on the Osage. So that was kind of special to me or to us because we never fished the Osage. We know nothing about the Osage. Have you ever fished the Osage?
No.
Well –
No trout in it. You know, there's no smallmouth. I say no smallmouth. I'm sure there probably are.
There is.
There's a lot of gar. You could probably catch some gar on a fly.
There's lots of gar.
Don't care for that.
So what would be your, if you was to, like, is that what you look for in a stream, is trout number one?
Well, no, I really do enjoy going after smallmouth.
Yeah.
Fish for a lot of trout, like to go after browns, and then browns and smallmouth rank right up there about even with each other. And then my third choice, obviously, would be rainbows. But, you know, Seth was talking off the air before we went on the air about some big rainbows in Taneycomo. I know for a fact there's some big rainbows as well as big browns down there, and boy, if you're fortunate enough to hook into one of them, you've got a fight on your hands.
Well, you know, coming up later on in segments 5 and 6, you know, maybe we should all talk about that.
We'll talk
about
that.
Like I said, Seth is very knowledgeable on Taneycomo. It may not be in the same aspect, you know, because you're almost strictly fly fishing, where he's not. But maybe you guys could both learn a lot from each other on the things.
I love talking trout.
There you go. And I love learning because, you know, I don't know squat about
I'm
going
to get you down there one of these days.
So I'm excited about getting back down there. But
and I'm going to get a fly rod in his hand one of these days.
Yeah.
I do have a fly rod.
Well, he's going to get me one. He's got a fly shop. I'm going to get a custom fly rod from Jay Cook's Fly Rod. I'm excited about that. I've already got
it's
a reel.
Fun. I keep one. I'm not as into it as I was, but I went through a phase where I was pretty hardcore into fly fishing when I was younger.
Yeah, well, I enjoy doing it. And I take a handful. I take half a dozen clients throughout the year that want to go fly fishing. That's all they want to do. And I can just relate to usually it's a white streamer.
Well, you know, we've got a buddy, Todd Meyer, lives up at Columbia, likes to go after muskie with a fly rod.
Yeah, that would be a blast, wouldn't it?
12-weight rod with about 12-inch streamers.
Wow, that would be fun.
You had to work out to do that.
Oh, you know it.
Well, hey. We got a lot of good conversations coming up.
He has to lift weights before he goes fishing.
But, hey, coming up in this next segment, I want to talk about our big smallmouth we've caught in our tournaments because those are pretty memorable moments for us too. So stay tuned. You're listening to Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench, and we'll be right back.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. Remember, you can always listen to Wild at Heart anytime you want at our website, ESPN1073.com. Just click on Programming and Wild at Heart. Or if you have an Amazon Echo, just ask Alexa to play Wild at Heart from TuneIn Radio, and she'll bring up the latest episode for you. We're back here with Seth Turner, of course, Jerry Cook. We're talking about some of the highlights of our fishing tournament career. I mean, we're just saying tournaments in general because that's what we both Seth is my partner, which most of you know that. And he's also a big Lake Taney Como guy as well as Jerry. Those two can really relate to trout fishing. Seth is also – didn't you start off as a trout fisherman, Seth, for the most part?
I mean
– crappie and trout. What is the first thing you remember really being addicted to?
Well, Dad has – every June we'd go down and stay at Lazy Valley Resort on Taney Como every June. I mean, I've been going down there for – gosh.
65 years?
At least 25 years.
25.
At least
okay.
25 years. I mean, I'm 32 now, so I'm not for sure when he started going exactly. But, yeah, I've been going down there forever, really.
Yeah.
And,
that's a long time.
And of course,
since you were seven.
And, of course, we, you know, we fish Merrimack Springs a lot. Mm-hmm. Used to always go opening day and all yeah. that. But, I mean, trout fishing's always been something I did. Crappie fishing, you know, we do it in the spring. Well, the last couple of years, you know, we've really gotten into the winter crappie fishing.
Oh, that's the best. Yeah. My favorite right there.
Yeah. Well, you and I have went a few times,
oh,
Lake
yeah.
the Ozarks,
yeah.
Thomas Hill
was a blast.
Oh yeah.
That
we're
was
trying
fun.
To get back up there soon.
I've still been talking about that ever since.
We'll get back up
yeah,
there
we need
soon.
To go.
And, so I've really gotten into the crappie the last few years. Once I got into the winter fishing, because as far as I'm concerned, you can have that spring fishing.
Yeah,
give
absolutely.
Me winter crappie fishing.
I'm the same way. I told Seth, you know, I've been stocking up on the crappie, and I've been kind of stingy. Usually, I'm so bad about the crappie fishing. I'll go catch some crappie, try to sweet talk whoever I'm fishing with. Well, are you sure? If you don't want them, I'll take them. You know, that kind of deal. And
I've donated you some of my crappie.
Oh yeah,
a few times.
I've swindled a lot of people out of their crappie. Believe it or not, I'm kind of embarrassed to say that, but they're kind-hearted people, and I'll try to return the favor sometime later. But like usually when I don't really feel like doing it, or if we don't catch a limit, or if it's summertime. But anyway. Go ahead, John.
So you're always catching release on bass, right?
I am, 100%.
But crappie you'll keep?
Yes.
Crappie
okay.
are more of a...
They're very prolific.
They're, yes.
Very.
You got to keep on them.
They really repopulate very quickly.
Okay. Crappie are known as a food fish to most people. Now, there is like the Crappie Masters Circuit. And, I mean, you have your very serious crappie anglers that treat them like your bass. You know,
like we do our
bass.
Bass.
I mean, there's...
See... Yeah. We are, like, with our smallmouth, we got our trophy smallmouth, what we call our trophy smallmouth, which is 20 inches, 18 to 20 inches. Those are trophy smallmouth. They're old, old fish. They've earned their keep. Treat them with respect. Let them go. Let the, free the fighter, so they say. Kind of like the crappie guys. Them big crappie guys that are just, that's their life is crappie fishing. They're the same way. You catch a big 14, 15, 16-inch crappie, which is big. Let it go. You know, don't keep them. Keep them 9, 10 inches, like Seth likes them.
I look at it, every fish that way, whether it's catfish, crappie,
it
trout.
Is.
If you know, I love to eat fish as much as the next guy, but if you catch a big fish,
even the catfish.
Put it, catfish,
yeah,
a big blue
way.
Cat,
yeah.
Those fish are all old. They're great reproducers.
Oh, yeah.
Let them go. Keep the smaller ones for the table. I mean, it's...
However you guys want to take this.
Those big ones are fun to catch, and you
exactly.
catch them more than once.
You guys can take this however you want. Everyone knows that I'm a 100% diehard smallmouth angler. And anyone, if I heard of anyone keeping smallmouth of any size, they know it would be frowned upon by myself. But I'm just like you. When it comes to big fish, I let them all go. If nothing else, I'm giving somebody else the opportunity or at least
exactly.
the option to where I just caught me a 58-pound blue. That's way – you don't need to be – you know what I mean? I just don't – it's not going to taste near as good as that 6-pounder.
Well, the smaller
anyway.
Fish always eat better anyway.
Always, always. And that fish has been there a long time, and now all I can think about is the next person that catches that 58, or maybe the next time it gets caught, yeah. it may be 64 pounds.
And
you
a
know,
lot of we sporty trout fishermen feel the same way about big browns especially.
Yeah,
but even big rainbows. Let them live to fight again another day and let somebody else enjoy the pleasure of hooking into that big fish
yeah.
because it isn't every day you do that.
Right. No, that's for sure. That's kind of how we look about our smallmouth, too. And I know that a lot of these guys frown upon us tournament anglers, but I promise you, us tournament anglers, Zach Feeler was on the show last week. He's one of our buddies and competitors. I promise you, you ask any of us, and we are just diehard about conservation and taking care of our fish and we do not let a fish die. Matter of fact, I've let fish go in a tournament before, not in our tournaments, but in my John Boat tournaments, that it just wasn't looking good. And I knew that me and Jack was actually fishing together, and I let multiple four-pounders, at least two of them were four-pounders, just let them go.
Yeah.
Just so they would live instead of winning a tournament.
Well, they're good brood stock there. And, again, the smaller – but I'm with you about smallmouth bass as well as brown trout. I have never kept a smallmouth, never kept a brown trout. Rarely keep a rainbow. Haven't kept one in a long time, but I would never keep a large one.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Well, and that's kind of the same way we are. There's certain fish that I look a little bit different upon, just like crappie. We were talking about crappie.
Yeah.
And everyone will tell you, a smallmouth, that's one of the most notorious things, facts about a smallmouth, is their growth rate is very slow. Mm-hmm. It takes them a long time to get to be a big size.
Like
large 10, size like that.
10 years to get to 18 inches, I believe.
Yeah, and their lifespan is only like 14 to 16. It's not very long. So if you think about it, they can live longer, just like humans' lifespan. Our lifespan may only be in our 70s, but then we may have the pleasure or displeasure, however you want to look at it, of living to be 108. You know, it's just some people are blessed that way. God blesses other people in different ways and blesses us all just for having today, I guess. But these fish, unlike the smallmouth, the crappie, they're just so abundant. I mean, they're schooling fish, and you can throw them in a pond that seems like that pond is plumb full of them by the next season. But the next year, you just got crappie everywhere.
Just like bluegill.
Yes, like bluegill. Yeah. And so, I'm trying to put it in perspective, the reason why I look at it the way I do. Because I don't want to take away any resource we have from something. If I knew that if I took my limit of crappie every time I went to Lake of the Ozarks, I was going to deplete that resource, I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Just like, here's a fact. I don't care in anyone. I don't think anyone that's got a lick of common sense about fishing and about how it works would disagree. But if myself, Seth, everyone that we know that are very good, avid anglers, kept our legal limit every single time we went out there, that resource would be depleted in 12 months. I promise you, if every time you went out, you kept your 6 smallmouth, and I did the same thing.
Yeah.
No matter if it was 12, 18, 17, 19, 20, whatever it was, we kept it. We kept it every single time.
But with crappie or bluegill, bluegill will actually overpopulate a lake or a pond in no time, a small lake.
So will crappie.
Yeah,
bass, exactly.
Bass will too.
That's a pond.
Yeah. Yeah. But see, here's another thing about the difference between smallmouth and largemouth. Smallmouth have to have a certain environment.
Right.
Certain quality of water, certain temperature of water. Mm-hmm. That's the reason why you don't hear about people catching them thriving. They do not thrive in Lake of the Ozarks.
No.
But they exist there. They do exist. I've caught them there. But it's because there's river systems there that they live in. They live in those river channels, and then they'll move down to the lake just like any other fish, river fish. They come down to the lake in the winter, and then all it's spawning time, now they go back up in the river
system. A largemouth can live in just about any environment.
They can live in a mud puddle.
Yeah, exactly.
They literally can. They can live anywhere, and if you think about it, you can't name – a lake or reservoir. I challenge anyone listening to this show right now to name a lake or reservoir where a largemouth bass cannot live or does not live, because I guarantee you they live anywhere in this country where there's
a body of water. As long as they have fresh water and a food source, they'll thrive.
That's it. But smallmouth, they've got to have specific environment to live there. Usually cool, clean water.
Yep.
That's why they do so much better in places like Table Rock or Stockton, whereas Lake of the Ozarks, they don't thrive very well at all. And you can't just throw them in a farm pond and expect them to live. Yeah. It just, sad as it is to say, they're probably not going to make
it. And some of the Ozark streams we have here, they do well in for those very same reasons.
And they do better in certain streams than others.
Exactly.
That's why some of our streams have better quality of smallmouth over the others. I fished some of them streams. You're thinking smallmouth, how they got to be the same. I fished the Gasconade.
No.
I fished the Pineys. And I go down there to the Castor River and the, what's that other river down there by the Castor? Do you know that river? It's
around the current?
Elephant Rock. No.
Oh, okay.
No.
Black River?
No, it's not the Black. I'll think of it as soon as we go to commercial. But it's anyway, the Castor's one of them. Mm-hmm. Castor and dang it, Jack would know if he was here. Jack,
I'm
was
not
with
sure.
Me. Anyway, about it, we went down there to fish, and we caught a lot of fish. We caught smallmouth, but the quality wasn't even close to what we have around here. And yeah. It was just because of the conditions they're given or the food source, whatever it is. They don't get big there. And Jack even told me that. He said, we're not going to catch really big ones down here. But anyway, we got a little bit off subject. I want to talk about some of our most memorable catches in our tournaments. And, you know, we can go off subject and talk about things. Anything that arises, let's just go and just run with it. But all in all, I know you caught a really nice smallmouth. You caught a really nice largemouth. Seth, everyone's always talking about Seth as our largemouth guy, and I'm the smallmouth guy. But we'll talk about some of them, how we caught them, where we caught them, what we were using, all that kind of good stuff. Because I'm sure everyone's always wanting to know. They think all fishermen lie. The thing about it is, the funny part about it is, we don't lie. We're always telling the truth, but no one believes us. So, hey, what'd you catch that on? Seth goes, a pink trick worm. Ha ha. And they just turn and walk away.
It's hard to lie when you make videos of most of it, too.
You know, Zach told me, he said, you know where I caught that big 4-pounder? I said, where? He goes, right where you caught yours. I said, how do you know? He goes, I watched your video. Anyway, we got to go to commercial, pay the bills. So, we'll be right back in just a few minutes. This is Wild at Heart, and I'm Tommy Vance. Stay tuned.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source for information about what's going on in the world of outdoor recreation in the Ozarks and points beyond. This segment of our show is brought to you by the Missouri Trappers Association, dedicated to preserving the heritage and skills of trapping. We're back here with Seth Turner and, of course, my co-host Jerry Cook. We're talking about some of the tactics Seth and I have used in some of our tournaments, our more successful tournaments, or our big bass tournaments. We just talked about, in a couple segments ago, we was talking about Seth's big 5.5-pounder they caught in the Osage to win big bass. Now, we're going to talk about some Gasconade smallmouth that we've caught in tournaments that has won us big bass honors. And actually, one of them wasn't even big bass, believe it or not. And it was a 430-something, which is a tick of a smallmouth, but it still won us some giant TVs, didn't it?
I think my four-pounder I caught in that other one, the other Walmart tournament, it got beat out, too, by like a 430.
It did.
They got beat out. Both got beat out.
You're
by
right.
Some freaks.
Well, bottom line is we fish a lot of tournaments. We've seen a lot of tournaments fished. If you catch a 3.5 plus, there's a good chance you're going to win. If you catch a 4 plus, it's almost like there ain't no way. I mean, we got this. You got big bass because a 4-pounder is like a unicorn. I mean, it's very rare. We'll say
only a few get caught every year.
Only a few. Literally, out of all season long, there's only like 1 to 3 4-plus pounders that get the official weight, 4-plus, that gets weighed in all season long in tournaments.
A real bronze back. Huh?
A true bronze back. A true giant. I mean, a true Ozark Giant.
Legit 20-plus inch smallmouth.
I mean, huge. So Seth caught one that was like 404 or something like that, wasn't it?
Something like
that. It was 40-something. I mean, it was a 4-pounder. I mean, it was huge. And let's talk about that. How'd you catch it? We don't have to go in full depth, but basically people are like, well, how'd you catch it? That's the first thing. You know, I was talking to a buddy of mine the other day, and he said anytime someone catches a fish, especially a big fish, what is the first thing they're thinking or they say? What'd you catch it on? That's what they want to know. Everyone wants to know. Where'd you catch it? What'd you catch it on? So what'd you catch it on?
Well, just not to sound like a broken record, but, you know, it was fall. It was clear. You could see 6, 7, 8 foot deep on the Gasconade. And we were drifting down it was 3 or 4 foot maybe. A lot of rock and stuff mixed in there. Swift water, it's not really known for as a big fish spot. But good spot to catch smallies. We was drifting down through there, and there was kind of a cut, and there was a big wad of, you know, couple logs all laying down right there, and I was throwing my, you know, pink worm and pitched, flipped it, or cast past the log and twisted a few times, and this big old smallmouth just comes screaming up out of there and inhaled that worm and started going right back down and, you know, set the hook. And by some miracle, it got down into that log, and by some miracle, I was able to get that thing to come back out the way he went in, and then it came out into the middle of the river, and then we more or less just chased it down, and, you know.
I remember.
You were able to get the net under it, but it was an epic fight.
The one thing about me, I'm bragging about myself, I'm Johnny on the spot when it comes to that net. He sets the hook, and I drop what I'm doing. It's net time. That's my job now. No more catching fish.
You can tell how I react. You know if it's a big like. I may not say big fish, get the net.
I get a kick out of it. I get a kick out of being right there and being ready to net that fish. So, yeah, there's one four-pounder right there. It was an awesome. I mean, it's just.
It never jumped. It just bulldogged and ran.
It's almost just as exhilarating for me. I think it is to see my partner, see Seth catch it, as it is myself catch it, because I get to do everything but hold the rod. You know, I mean, I'm literally watching everything unfold, and I get to net it. I kind of feel like I kind of caught it too. You know,
probably a better view of what's going on than he does.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's something. I've got a true passion for this, and I really get a thrill out of it.
To me, it's kind of like, say, you're hunting with somebody, especially youth hunters.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Well, for example, last year I watched my buddy, one of my best friends, Nick, the one that fished with us today on the river. We were rifle hunting together, opening weekend of rifle season. And I said, you haven't got a deer yet, you get first dibs. Well, scored 144 inches as a 10-pointer. Came up out of a draw. We knew it was a nice deer, had no idea it was that nice. And, you know, I stuck to my word. He got to shoot it. You know, I watched it all happen. I didn't actually squeeze the trigger. It was an easy shot, you know, but I watched it all unfold. And, I mean, to me, it was just as awesome.
But he did. He got it. He shot it.
Oh, yeah. I mean.
I remember we was talking about that today.
It's way bigger than anything I've ever got.
Way better. But you know what? You were still just excited, wasn't you?
Oh, I was. Even more. I was wound up.
Well, so that's our first. I mean, there's nothing better. There's really not. And I've always told people, you know, I use the heavy line, and I do that for the reason that I can get away with it.
Fishing rope, huh?
Yeah, that's what he calls it. He calls it rope, but I can get away with it. They can run and all that heavy stuff, and I can drag them right out of there, and it's not a big deal.
It's going to burn me using that light stuff.
Yeah.
But.
He catches more fish that way a lot of times, though, because I can't get away with throwing that light line with some of my heavy stuff because I throw that. Anyway, so now that was that Walmart tournament of 2015.
I think it was it was 14 or 15.
14 or 15, yeah.
15.
Yeah. So, you know, we started fishing full-time the following year, and 2016 was a phenomenal year. Phenomenal year. I think – I don't know how many times
we got on a hot streak at the end.
Oh, my gosh. We won like first, second, first, third, first. I mean, it was like one after another. We were right there. And 10 pounds. We were catching 10 pounds a tournament, which is big.
That's a lot of weight.
So fast forward. This is 2016. No, it may have been. No, it was 2016. We were fishing the smallmouth only. We have not fished the smallmouth only. I am chomping at the bit thinking, oh, boy. That's what I love. Smallmouth. That is my thing. He's our largemouth pro, or whatever you want to call it. I'm the smallmouth guy, you know. I'm like, this is perfect. This is going to be great. We get out there. We're throwing our baits, our lures, and got one largemouth. Got one Kentucky. Got one largemouth. Got one largemouth. Got one Kentucky. You got to be kidding me.
We had several two and a half pounds.
We're catching two and a half pound largemouth and Kentuckys, or spots, whatever you want to call them, and not a single smallmouth one.
Doesn't do any good.
Yeah. So, you know, I've always said, everyone's always like, I just got onto them right away, and I just couldn't keep it going. We hardly ever start out good. It's almost always like, oh, we'll catch a fish here and there, but – I think we pride ourselves in figuring something out, because what we do is, even when the days are tough or even when the bite isn't exactly how we think it was going to be, we figure out, hey, they don't want this, or they don't want this color, or they're not around this kind of stuff. We need to go to this kind of stuff. And then over the course of the day, we figure something out. So usually those last 2 to 3 hours are when we shine. That's when we do the best. So now we're fishing, and now we start catching some smallmouth. We're starting to figure out a pattern. We catch one. I think we caught them on a fluke or something. I caught a few of them.
I think the first one we keeper we boated was that biggest one I caught, which was like an 18-incher on like a swim bait.
Yeah,
and then you followed up with a fluke right away.
Then I threw a fluke in there and caught one on a fluke. Then I ended up catching one on a buzz bait. I think, and I said, "I told you, never give up." Yeah. It was the only one, but it was a good one. It was a 16.
We finally
and a half.
Stumbled onto a stretch that I had always thought looked very good, but
so,
it never produced.
Never produced. So we're in some deeper water. This is fall conditions. Seth throws, and somehow or another, it skips or something and goes up in a little part of a tree. He can't get it unhung. It's quite a ways away. Sheer coincidence. I look down, and I see something that just – I was like a big light from God shined down, an angel singing. Oh, and I'm like, look at this log. I said, look, there's a log. And Seth goes, yeah, there is. And he's trying to get his bait unhung. And I say, don't go too fast, Seth, or something. He's just getting to get his bait, but he's still trying. I'm looking and scanning this log, looking around, scanning, trying to imagine where it's going underwater because I can't see what it looks like over here.
It's out in the middle of the river.
It's
like
out in the middle of the river.
Deep.
It's not even close to the bank. Everyone's usually hitting the banks. That's where most of the cover's at. Well, this is not. This is way out in deeper water. I see this, and I grab my jig. That's my bread and butter is a jig. And I scan, I envision 2 or 3 more times. Now I'm locked in right there. I see a spot in the water. I can't tell where it's at, but I'm just envisioning that's where that tree probably ends up. That's where the base of it is. I pitch over to it. It hits the water. I do another scan just to kind of make sure I'm where I think I'm at. I'm looking down, and we got this all recorded. You know, and as I'm lifting up, I see my line. I think I may see it jump a little bit, but I see it move. It's moving. And I know right away it's not going to move on its own. There's a fish moving for it.
Your bit.
Yeah, so I reel down, and I lay the hammer. I mean, my rod bows over, and the fight is on. Well, Seth says I use rope. I'm not jacking around. I'm like, get the net. And I'm horsing him in. I'm like, here he comes. I don't want to give him a chance to get a second wind or get underneath the log. Anyway, I really, man. And net him and ends up being, I mean, a big one. Almost 4 pounds.
Like 380
something. 3.83 pounds. Big fish.
It's a chunk.
Yep. So he ended up.
You got big smallmouth
big
with small that.
Big smallmouth of the tournament. That was a smallmouth only tournament. So how perfect can that be? You know, having that kind of
and
day.
That was our, I think that was our last keeper, too.
Yeah. And that was
it
the
was
last
like
last time we fished the
ending.
Smallmouth tournament because ever since then, old Feeler's had it on the Big Bass Bash
that
every
year. It's the same weekend as the Big Bass Bash, yeah.
Hopefully that changes. I think I talked to Zach and that's going to change. But anyway, that's another giant smallmouth story we got for you.
That's probably my favorite one.
Well, me too. I think it is. But hey, let's take a break from our smallmouth stories and let's talk about a little bit of trout fishing, some Taneycomo stuff between you guys. I want to learn some more about some Taneycomo because you keep talking about it. You got me all amped up about it, but I haven't got to go yet. So,
and coming up, we'll be talking more fish stories. This is Wild at Heart. I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook. Stick around.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart. I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook. I'm here this evening with our host, Tommy Bench, and Seth Turner. And we're going to be telling more fish stories. Seth and I were talking earlier and off the air about Taneycomo and trout fishing there. Of course, I'm a fly fisherman. He's a spin caster, but I think you've done some fly fishing on Taneycomo too, haven't you?
Yeah, when I was younger, I went through a phase where I was very into fly fishing. Last time I met you, we talked about, from where I was at, Roger Stewart,
right.
He's a chiropractor in Owensville.
That's correct.
When I was probably 10-ish,
mm-hmm.
He held some fly tying classes and some fly kit, taught us how to cast.
Right.
And he actually worked out a deal with Sage Fly Rods mm-hmm. and got some blanks, and we built some really nice sage fly rods.
I think Doc is really into educating, getting young kids.
Yeah, so he's the one that got me into it.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't do it as much anymore, but I've still got a fly rod handy. And this past summer I was down at Tinicomo, and I finally broke it out and fished some olive microbe jigs, little 100th-ounce micro jigs, mm-hmm. you know, beneath the float for some midge and rainbows, and
right.
caught the tar out of them. I had a blast. I look like a fool trying to cast because I was so rusty, but I caught some.
Well, those jigs are a little hard to cast, especially overhead casting with a fly rod. You can roll cast them okay.
Yeah.
But trying to do an overhead cast is a bit of work there sometimes. And
I don't think – I probably need a little more power behind the rod. It's a 4-weight. I didn't think it would have been easier with a 5 or 6-weight.
Six-weight would be my choice for that, yes. When I go to Tinicomo, I usually take a 6-weight or an 8-weight rod because, as everyone knows, I like to throw big streamers.
That's what I'm going to do. I'm telling you, because I like throwing a fluke. Whenever if I ever get in the float, throwing a fly rod. But are you ever going to just throw anything besides that streamer? Nope. Streamer or articulated streamer. That's it.
Oh, I throw other things as well. I do throw a few dry flies.
No, I'm saying me.
Oh, you. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I'll throw.
Yeah.
You got any buzz baits for fly rod?
No.
I guess you could swing a mouse, a floating
mouse. There you go.
Well, and I tell you what.
At night, too.
Whopper poppers.
Well, I tell you what, Seth, quite honestly, throwing a mouse pattern early in the morning or late in the afternoon, early evening, doing what we call pounding the banks, and that's throwing that mouse pattern to the bank, pulling it off like that mouse is then swimming the river, and brown trout and even smallmouth really like to just devour those things.
One of the coolest fly fishing trip experiences I had down there there's a guy, I can't remember, he ran a guide service, but his name's Leonard Keeney, and he had a fly called a PMS,
mm-hmm.
and he gave me a few of them in all black, and he said, go up there at night and just swing it. Mm-hmm. So we went up there, Dad and I went up there at night, and it was a full moon, so you could see the surface very well. You could see the trout coming up and all that, and I threw that out there, and my first cast, it swung down. Got downstream of me, he said, let it go directly downstream and then just strip it back real fast. It'll be right under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And that's about as close to as I've ever seen a topwater trout bite. But those trout would just, they'd hit that fly and then come out of the water hitting that thing. It was incredible.
It.
And you'd see it in the moonlight. And
any specific kind of trout or just, was it browns or rainbows?
I caught a few small browns, but it was mostly rainbows. But I mean, it was every cast, it was awesome. Nothing huge, just, you know, up to 15 inches.
Yeah.
The rainbows are not quite as aloof, if you will, as the browns are.
Yeah. The browns hit, they were the ones that would fly out of the water. They were much more aggressive on the strike.
Yeah. They, as I say, they have the personality more like a bass. You know,
they're very smallmouthy, which is what I love. I love browns.
They're very territorial. You invade their turf, and they're coming after you. But, we've been talking about trout and smallmouth, which I love, rainbows, browns, and smallmouth. But I tell you something that I really do enjoy, and I didn't get to do it this year. But my main fishing buddy and I like to go to Wisconsin salmon fishing on the Root River, which is in right downtown Racine, Wisconsin, right near Lincoln Park.
Mm-hmm.
It's a small stream, but, boy, you can catch some salmon in there. I'm talking, you know, 15 to 25 pounders easy.
Is salmon, can you only catch salmon fly fishing for the most part? Isn't that really a fly?
No.
You can catch them on, it's kind of like trout. You can catch them a lot of trolling, plugs, fly fish. There's a lot, ton of ways to catch them. Now, what kind of salmon were those?
Or become a grizzly bear.
They were the salmon that came up out of Lake Michigan, and you've got me on that one, Seth.
I'm not real familiar with. I mean, I know some of the different species of salmon, but I'm not. It's mostly like Alaska.
Yeah,
I don't really
know
much about, you know, stateside.
Yeah, I don't know if these were kings or
lower 50 or 48.
Yeah, But salmon fishing is big on the Root River in Wisconsin, on the Pierre Marquette in Michigan. They're all Lake Michigan fish.
Okay.
You know, they'll come up out of Lake Michigan, spawn, and then die, of course. And then they're the fish that hatch and survive will go back down to the lake and live there for four or five years and then go back and spawn again. Wisconsin is very protective of their fish.
How do they ever get so big if they die as soon as they spawn?
Well, they got big by living in Lake Michigan for 4 or 5 years.
Oh, so they don't spawn every year?
No, they don't spawn every year.
So they're that big? Because, I mean, I've seen pictures. You know, we've all seen it. You know, the old grizzly bear with the salmon, catching the salmon. I mean, big ones.
Yeah.
I just didn't realize they get that big in 4 or 5 years. I guess that's probably why, you know, like the smallmouth, I mean, 4 or 5 years, they're not even keeper size barely.
Yeah.
Now, you thought those were kings. Now, I know, like, you know, you get your kings on, say, like the Kenai River in Alaska, and I've seen where those things get, I mean, absolutely gigantic. Are they kind of the same?
I'm incorrect about the species there. My buddy is more informed about those. I just go with him, and I love to catch them, love to eat them.
Is it maybe like a male-female thing? Maybe the female that spawns dies, but the male does not, or vice versa? Or I'm trying to learn here, guys. I'm a sponge.
They go up stream to the hatchery there in Racine, and they milk those fish, actually. And then, and I'm not familiar with the process. I'm not a fish biologist, but then the fish just die, actually, and I think you're only, I forget how many we can keep now, but I tell you what, there are game wardens up there, for lack of a better term for them, conservation agents, very protective. I remember hooking a fish up there. I knew it was foul hooked, but you got to get it in before you can release it. And somebody up on the bank, that fish is foul hooked. Yes, sir, I know. I'm going to release him.
What does foul hooked mean?
It means he's not hooked in the mouth. He's hooked on the fins.
Side. Yeah. There's so many places you could basically snag him on accident.
Yeah.
It's not like he meant to do it, but the fish may have swiped at it. He set the hook, and it may have been in the side of his face.
Yeah.
Instead of inside.
And that's foul hooking when it's not.
And sometimes when you get fish spawners, if they're running in big schools, you know, and you're trying to drift through them, you'll accidentally catch them in the back stripping in. I mean, it happens, you know. You try your best not to, but.
Well, it ain't no different than bass. We was talking about that today, about how sometimes a bass, a smallmouth, for example, will hit your bait with its mouth completely closed.
Mm-hmm.
Just trying to kill it.
Kind of bum rush it.
Just trying to bum rush it. And then they get it hurt. You know, say it's a minnow. Well, that's what we're using today's minnow bait fish imitation. It just hits it with full force with its mouth closed. And now that thing is just over there, like really dead, almost dying. Then it's just an easy pick and just go over there and eat it. And a lot of times you set the hook, strip it out of its way, you won't catch it. But if you just keep on going, like, hey, you're not going to, you know, it'll come back and you'll catch it. But that's what he's talking about. Or they'll hit it, you'll set the hook and catch it in the side because its mouth wasn't even open.
I've caught trout down on the Merrimack, and as you know, I'm not a big park fisherman, but I have caught trout above the dam in Montauk Park that were caught in the back. They'd come up and slap at that fly and then start to run. And all you're feeling is something hitting that fly, and so you set the hook. Fish is already gone, but you caught him in the back.
Yeah. I caught one with my bare hands once.
Mm-hmm.
I did.
I've had that happen a lot with even jig fishing. Like usually, I'm a big.
He changed the subject real quick here, Seth. You want to hear about my bare-handed trout catch. Go ahead.
Fill us in since we're telling fish stories.
Oh, well, just so happens I was a youngster, Merrimack Springs. And they got what they call fish or hatchery there. And if you throw in the food, they all come running up there, and you can catch them. No, I'm just kidding. But I did. I caught one with my bare hands right there. But that's, like you said, that's in a park.
Yeah.
They're kind of stupid.
Yeah, I'm not a park fisherman.
Me neither. That's why, no offense to anybody that does, because trust me, if you love fishing, you love the outdoors, you're friends of ours. But I live around Bennett Springs. I grew up around Bennett Springs. All my friends, kind of like people who grew up around Merrimack Springs. But it's just kind of a standing joke. You know, we see all these rich folks with these got more money and tackle than they, you know what I mean? They can't catch trout to save their life, but they're down in the park. You know, they're pet fish, basically. So, anyway. But
what I call the dumb hatchery trout.
There you go.
Hey, how many trout did you catch when I took you to the park earlier this year?
I couldn't count. I couldn't remember. I lost count after like 27 or something.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I hate to break this off, but, man, this segment has just absolutely flown by. So don't go away. We'll be right back with more fish stories. I'm your co-host, Jarrett Cook, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3 FM. I'm your co-host, Jerry Cook, and we're telling fish stories tonight.
Lots of fish stories. We've already talked about a few of them. Now you guys are getting into some Taney Como trout. Do you, either one of you two, got some good fish stories from Taney Como? I know one thing, since we like to jab at each other a little bit. He was talking about how many trout have I caught. Who cares?
Your girls caught more trout than you did when I know, took them.
But that's my fatherly duty is to make sure that they
Well, John asked if I had any fish stories about ones that got away off air a few minutes ago. I actually hooked onto a brown trout on the Merrimack River that I'm telling you was absolutely the biggest brown trout I've ever hooked into.
10 pounds?
I don't know. I don't know how much he weighed, but I'll say
what
this.
Would you guess?
That's the first time I'd ever had a trout run me down to the backing on my fly reel, and I hooked into him right off a gravel bar there, and he ran downstream and ran me down to the backing, and I was fishing 6X tippet, and I thought, man, this is really going to be a job getting him back upstream here now. Well, I worked him back up there with a lot of finesse, okay? And then he takes off upstream. Well, now getting him back to me after he's run upstream isn't quite so difficult.
Yeah, because now you got the current.
Now I got the current working for me
right, rather
than against me. But, again, I'm fishing 6X tippet. So a lot of finesse is required to get him to hand, so to speak.
So sorry.
That's what I was going to ask. Go ahead.
6X tippet, that's equivalent to, is it like 3.5 pound test or two?
Yeah,
or
it depends on what brand using.
Okay.
And so on.
It's very light.
That's probably the best way to relate to myself. Because every time they're like talking about 6X, 4X, 8X,
yeah.
I'm like, what? No,
so,
what are you talking about?
Yeah.
I'm like, we're both looking at you like,
well, that's why I brought it up, because you're probably thinking, what the heck is that?
I've heard it several times now, but I'm
just
still curious.
Think 2 pound test, basically, though.
5X is typically 5 pound test.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Are real close to it. And then 6X is lighter in weight. 7X is light. I don't even mess with 8X.
I didn't even know they made 8X until recently. I'm like, holy moly.
Ah, man, it is so thin.
7's the lowest or lightest I had seen.
Yeah, and I don't even fool with it myself.
I don't know many people.
Why
do.
Did you have to feel like you had to resort to 6X tippet? Why couldn't you get away with 4?
Well, the water was rather clear, and so the clearer the water, the smaller tippet you use.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, and as we were just saying, though, 7X and 8X tippet, I don't even carry any 8X at all. And if I have a spool of 7X in my vest, it gets old before it's all used, okay? 6X is typically the smallest that I like to use. But anyway, I'm working this fish, and just by his behavior, it's got to be a brown. So he goes downstream a little bit but doesn't run me down to the backing yet. I can tell he's starting to get a bit fatigued. So I thought, okay, now I can bring this fish to hand. He gets in there, and I've got my rod tip in the air, and, you know, I'm working him towards me, and he does that roll that brown trout will do, and, man, he was gone. But that had to have been, you know, probably a good 6, maybe 7 pound brown.
Yep.
There was another guy on the gravel bar there fishing with me, and he said, man, I knew there was some big brown trout in this river. Didn't know there was any that big.
So it broke the line?
It broke the line, yes,
okay.
Yeah. which isn't all that difficult to do with 6X tippet.
Brown have a lot of teeth.
Yeah, brown trout especially. Yes. They have some really sharp teeth. If I've had a good day on the river catching brown trout, my thumb will be raw. Now, rainbow, not so much, but browns, they've got some pretty sharp teeth, and the bigger they are.
You get a brown that's much size, I mean, you if you get your finger near his mouth, I mean, they can draw blood.
Yeah.
Not like a walleye, but they're not far off.
Yeah, they've got some sharp teeth. Yeah. I mean, it's like a little saw blade in mm-hmm. there. You know?
Yes.
So that's the biggest fish that I've ever hooked into that got away.
So if you don't mind, Jerry,
yeah.
for someone who hasn't ever watched anyone fly fish before, like myself maybe, how do you work the line on a when you got a fish on the hook, mm-hmm. how are you bringing him in? I mean, I'm familiar with a regular bait cast, and you're going to crank turn a crank to wind it in, but you don't have that on a fly rod. So
everybody has their own way of doing that. I usually have the line between the cork grip and my finger here
on the right hand.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I'm stripping it in, and that's kind of acting as a drag. Of course, line will curl up, coil up around my feet there. And given a chance, then I will reel some of the slack line in.
So you're pulling the line in with your left hand.
That's correct, yes.
Just grabbing onto the line
because
and pulling it.
I cast right hand, reel left hand. Okay. And so
using the right hand to feather it. Let it pull.
Now, I do fish with a guy who actually does reel in his line a lot of times. And I've thought, man, what are you thinking, because to me, that's an awfully slow way of doing it. And, to me, the best drag is the drag that you can truly feel with your finger. A lot of people, especially in this area, say, oh, reel is just to hold the line. Well, until you latch onto some big fish, then you need a good drag.
Yeah.
Down on Tanny Como, I would recommend a good reel with a good drag.
Yeah, because, if you're throwing big baits, it's not out of the question. You could literally hook a 20-pound trout down there.
Absolutely.
It's not out of the question.
It's not out of the question at all, and it's been done a number of times.
Oh, yeah.
You'd mentioned Lily's Landing earlier down there. They've got, what did they name the trout that hangs out?
There's two of them. I got to see the smaller of the two in person this summer, mm-hmm. actually. We were staying at Lazy Valley, which is two resorts down.
Right, uh-huh.
And I was fishing, catching some little rainbows, and this was at night, so the lights on the dock were on, but about a 20-pound class brown comes mm-hmm. swimming out from underneath me and just swimming right in front of me. I'm like, my gosh, that's the biggest trout I've seen in person.
They call that one
Frankie.
Frankie,
that's not the bigger of the two, though. They've okay. got one that sticks really close to Lily's dock. He hangs around the fish cleaning station.
Right, exactly, yeah.
And they estimate him to be pushing – he's in that mid-30-pound range.
Yeah.
And they're thinking he's 36 to 38 inches long, and they call him Frank.
Yeah, that's correct, Frank, yep. Yeah.
And and I believe
– huge.
On I don't know if it's Phil Lily's – personal YouTube or if it's the Lily's Landing YouTube channel, but they stuck a GoPro underneath his one of his docks there mm-hmm. and filmed Frank up close. I mean, he's just a beast of a trout.
Can you imagine hooking into that trout?
I don't know how you would get him in on because you're probably going to be using light tackle and it's just hard to believe
because you're not going to fool him with heavy tackle.
Yeah, it's hard to fathom.
Yeah, yeah. You couldn't use your rope Tommy. You would have to use...
Oh, I don't know. Challenge accepted.
Yeah, you would have to...
The biggest you're going to probably... You could get away
bait.
With...
Jerk bait.
You could probably... I've used up to 8-pound test on
fluoro.
With jerk baits when they're running, cranking water.
8-pound fluoro. I'll get him. We'll go down there, Seth. We'll make a video of it.
You're going to have to learn how to skip under Phil's dock, I guess, because that's where he likes to live.
I'll tip my jerk bait.
Oh, yeah. He don't have no reason to leave.
I'll tip my jerk bait with some trout guts.
Don't get caught.
Is that legal?
That's not legal.
That's not legal.
What if I snag the trout guts with my jerk bait as I'm working?
Nope, legal.
No, don't get caught. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
I guess you could technically use shad guts.
Hey, I know what I could do. I could get a trout swim bait and just make it look like a
dinosaur.
Well,
how about an articulated streamer on a nice 8-way fly rod, you know? Yeah.
Well, because I want to prove you wrong that I can catch him on my
well, on I my would
bait
say
caster. I can catch him on a bait caster.
If I were going after Frank, I would be using an 8-weight rod, probably using a 3X leader with probably a 4X tippet and an articulated streamer. a white Heisenberg, for example, yeah. Which looks like a bait fish.
Yeah, well, that's probably not a bad idea.
What about you, Seth? Would you concur with that? Or
I mean, I'd say that's as good as anything. You know, if I was targeting strictly a big fish, I'd probably be using, you know, a full-size, like, 4 or 5 inch jerk bait,
mm-hmm.
You know, but probably on bass casting gear, but you're mm-hmm. you're accomplishing the same thing,
you're accomplishing,
you know.
The same thing, but you're talking spinning.
That upper part, yeah, and
yeah,
you're
I'm talking fly fishing. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, that sounds as good as anything to me.
Well, those articulated streamers, especially, you know, something white like the Heisenberg, the Rattlesnake would be a small shad lookalike. The Circus Peanut is a little larger Kelly Gallup pattern that he came up with out west, and they're typically 6 inches the way he ties them. Mm-hmm. I have them tied at about 3.5 inches, and they seem to work a lot better in the Midwest here. Bill Cooper was in the shop one day and told me, he said, I can tell you right now, those streamers work down on the river.
Well, you know, that's been some great Taney Como stories right there, especially the one you said that went on Taney Como, but the one that got away. But, hey, stick around. We're going to be right back with some more fishing stories, maybe some big smallmouth stories or some largemouth stories on the Gasconade. I'm Tommy Benz, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back to Wild at Heart, your source of information about the Ozarks and a few points beyond. This segment is brought to you by Gar Truck and Equipment and the Outdoor Superstore, your Husqvarna dealer located on the North Outer Road in St. James. We're back with more fishing stories. We've heard about big smallmouth, big brown trout, big largemouth that almost got away, and some that didn't get away. But now we're going to talk about another smallmouth trip. Like I said, we've got Seth Turner here as well as Jerry Cook, my co-host, but we got my fishing partner Seth here, and I figured what a great opportunity to talk about some of the stories that, you know, the in-depth, what we used, how we caught them, the true blue reels. This is what happened, you know, because it's kind of behind the scenes on how the fish was caught. A lot of people know about the tournament results or the fish or the weight or whatever it was, but they don't know the stories on how we caught them. And this next one's a dandy. I'll tell you what, you're going to get a kick out of this one. I'm going to tell it from my point of view and let him talk from his point of view. So what happened is, and I call this the super secret, because what happened is we have our spots. We have certain spots that we hit this spot, we hit that spot. We have a multitude of them, but we have lots of spots that we hit, and very few spots do we just say, well, let's just try to fish this random place. We know where we want to fish because we've been doing it long enough. We know what's good and what should be good and what time, whatever. So we start at the upper end of this hole, and we just, for some reason or another, we fish it and we start drifting down. We normally don't do this. Well, we're just drifting down and just kind of randomly fishing. Well, all of a sudden we notice something. We notice a change in the river, changing, and all of a sudden one of us gets a bite or catches a fish, and then another one, then another one, then another one. We stop. We're like, wait a second. You know, there's something going on here. And then we catch another one, another one, another one. Long story short, we sat in that one spot and just kept catching fish after fish after fish after fish. I mean, it was like, this is amazing. And we're thinking, we can't let anyone know about this spot. And we ended up winning that tournament. And I ended up catching the big bass that tournament, which was an 18-incher. I think it was just shy of 3
It wasn't
pounds.
Real heavy, but it was 18 inches.
It was a small, skinnier 18-incher. That's another thing
just
I tell.
Wasn't a lot of big fish caught that day. It was a tough bite.
It was a tough bite. So, okay, so fast forward. We're like, okay, we got to keep that under our hat. We had never fished a spot before, but it's with an eyesight of 2 or 3 of our favorite spots. I mean, it's like right there. We're like, we never even knew this was there. So this is clear water. Now you fast forward a week or two later, our next tournament. Now it's dirty water. I mean, we couldn't see a foot.
Yeah, it dirtied up and came up.
It was dirty. Well, we're like, we know where the spot's at. We have a good idea where that spot's at. So we had tried it multiple times during the day. Long story short, we ended up finding the spot, and we're catching fish. And we're catching them with, I think we was catching with a crankbait, wasn't we?
They were on a crankbait bite.
We was catching on a crankbait bite. Well, it slowed down, and not very often do I get a chance to throw what I call my bread and butter, my jig. That's usually a slow it down, pick it apart, methodical, drag it along the bottom, real slow is what is how that works. So anyone that doesn't understand how a jig works or how I throw a jig, I don't really hop it or pop it or what they call stroke it on the river that often. I'll drag it just like a real crawdad would do, just kind of drag. And once in a while, I may pop it off a rock. If I hit a big enough rock where I can feel it, I'll pop it, you know, like that, and then it kind of falls down. Anyway, so I'm working that jig. We had already caught our limit. Well, I mean, we had a good bag, but you're always looking for that. Who doesn't like to catch a lunker, you know? So anyway, a boat runs by. I'll never forget it. I wave, dragging that jig, and here's another story about this that a lot of people don't know about. The night before I lay my hand, and you guys probably remember when I cut my hand real bad and I walked in, you guys were, what in the world happened to your hand? That happened the night before this tournament. So I got it all wrapped up. Everyone's like, you should have went to the ER. And I was like, I got a tournament to win. I promise my kids, because this is the Walmart tournament, and every year you got to be first, second. There's usually 40-plus boats. If you're not first or second, you're not winning one of them big TVs. And my girl said, Dad, You got to win us one of them big TVs. So I said, okay, I'm going to do my best. You know, of course, it takes us both. It's not just me. We're a team here. So anyway, now fast forward. I've been grinding out all day long. Well, with a crankbait, it just kind of loads up, you know, kind of like they're talking about kind of pull back. But when it comes to a jig, you got to lay the hammer. I mean, it's a reel down and, I mean, set the hook hard. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm dragging this jig, and that boat goes by. I wave. And then shortly, I'm dragging it. I pop it off a rock, and I feel it. Thunk, I feel that bite. And normally, I don't hesitate. Normally, I just crank down, and I set the hook real hard, and it's fish on, time to fight. But it's like I think real fast, and I bet I've watched this video 10 different times. And I could see it in my eyes or my reactions. I'm thinking, how am I going to do this? What am I going to do? Because I know I can't set the hook like I normally do because it's going to put pressure right on there. I've got blood. I had blood all over my shirt. Had blood all over this. It was wrapped up.
Your rod handles were stained blood red.
My rod handles were all stained blood red from me catching fish and just being blood all day. I'm serious. This is one heck of a story. So what I do was, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure I left my left hand up by the rail so I could hold it with my fingertips. I took my right hand down at the bottom of the rod, and I torqued them real hard and jerked and set the hook on this fish. And when I did, of course, the rod bows over, and it's doubled over, and it feels like you just set the hook in a log because it's a big fish. And now I've got it. So I'm holding it, and I put my hand on the reel handle, and I said, big fish, this is a giant. And I remember saying, unless it's a drum, because we've been fooled by big drum before. It's a heartbreaking experience, but this water's so dirty you can't see. And so we didn't know. It's not like you could see 4 or 5 foot down. You couldn't see 6 inches down. So it comes up to the top. And, of course, I think we both realized at the same time, this is a giant smallmouth. Well, Seth goes to net. It was only, 6 or 8 foot of water, 7 foot of water? And it was, like, right underneath the boat. So it's not like it was way out there. It was right underneath us almost. I brought it straight up with my, quote, rope. And I brought it up. Seth goes to net, and it splashes everywhere. Missed number one. He missed it. And I'm like, dang it, you know. Well, it comes back, and it's kind of treading water. It's just, I mean, this thing is full of life.
She's green.
Oh, yeah. She wasn't slowing down a bit. And she's slashing around, and Seth goes again, missed number two, goes again like right after, missed number three. And I said, Seth. And he goes, I'm trying. I can't see her. This is like tournaments on the line, giant fish, 4-pounder. I mean, giant bass. This is a huge smallmouth. But in his defense, she was the exact same color as the water.
Every time she would boil or slash, it just kind of lose her.
You just lose because she blended in. It'd be like laying a piece of brown paper bag on a big old board of cardboard. You know what I mean? Just where to go? You know, it just kind of blends in. Anyway, I'm giving him a hard time about it, but he did. Like he missed one time, and then he missed like twice in a row. It was like a jab and another jab, like a self, like trying to get it. He was trying. I mean. I probably would have missed just as many times or more. But anyway, it finally got landed in the net. It was like glory. I mean, just glory thinking, okay, here it is. And this is like the biggest term of the year. The most boats, there's 40 to 50 boats every year. A lot of boats on the Gascony River. And I remember commenting, man, that's a giant. And he goes, that's a heck of a fish. I said, 4-pounder? And he goes, I don't know, but it's a good one, you know. And we ended up measuring it. And what it was
20 and a half inches.
20 and wow. a half inches. 20 good and swally. A half inches. And not only was it 20 and a half, but it had some shoulders. She had some shoulders
yeah,
on
she was
them.
Thick.
Yeah. So we knew it. We knew right there the deal was sealed. There was like no way we're going to finish less than top five. Probably we thought we got a good chance to win.
We thought we had it won and had big smallmouth.
We thought we got big smallmouth. We won this tournament because we had some other big fish. Lo and behold, little do we know, one of our good buddies, old Tim Feeler, was literally just right at the top of that hole. He was fishing the same hole we were, but at the very top of it, which is a few hundred yards away. Both top weights, he took first. Him and his partner took first. We took second. Was caught within 200 yards of each other, every fish, every one of them. And then as big as that smallmouth was, 438 or 430.
430-something.
430-something, there was like a 443 or something weighed in, bigger than ours. Unbelievable, because that's like Seth said, you only hear of less than – usually 2 or 3, 4-pound smallmouth that are caught all season long.
So did you get the big TV for your daughter? Daughters?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
You still got the big TVs.
65-inch 4K TV.
Wow. Yeah.
Thanks. I mean, Seth let me, because there was only one left. And what happens is how that works is we're a team. So they say, first place, Tim Feeler and Stacy.
It was Stacy Helton.
Stacy Helton. They won first. So Stacy and Tim went up there and they picked up whatever they wanted. I think they both got a TV, but for some reason they wanted the 55-inch. Or no, one of them took a Stacy took a 65, and then there was only one left. And I said, Seth, I really want that TV. He said, well, you know, you can take that one. I'll get this 55. So I got the 65. He got a 55.
Wow,
still pretty nice.
That's nice.
Yeah. Super nice TVs. We looked them up, not trying to be, oh, it's worth this much, but I mean, they're $600 to $800 TVs. So
nice.
Pretty cool. My girls love it. And we're every time we watch that TV, I say, girls, you remember where that TV come from? Oh, yeah, Dad.
And that tournament, what?
There's a lot of things. I'll tell you something else.
What does that raise money for again? Is that ALS?
No, that.
Or is it Children's Miracle Network?
Children's Miracle Network. That's the Children's Miracle Network. And then the ALS tournament was the one they put on for
Fishing for a Mission.
See, that's another thing. A lot of these tournaments are done for good reason. They're not just out there like, hey, I beat you and you know what I mean? Most of it's just raising money for good causes. Walmart donated all these products that were damaged. You got a box of this monitor, you know, that's sent to them. It gets banged around in the shipping a little bit. The box looks a little rough because it's been banged around. Product's still good, but it looks bad. It's hard, you know what I mean? It's just like anything else. You go to buy something, the packaging looks a little rough, you're more apt to buy the one that's got pristine packaging. So I think the guys
that put that on, it's mainly guys from the Hillbilly Bass Club. And
then a St. James.
And then is it they're kind of affiliated. Is it Vienna Marine kind of helps out with that too?
Yeah, they do.
I think.
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they put both of those on. Like I said, they do two of them. One is called Fishing for a Mission, where they raise money for ALS. And then the Walmart tournament, which is the biggest one, where Walmart donates the money and all that. And, you know, you still get a lot of guys. A lot of our tournaments, we are competing for money. You know, we pay our entry fees, compete for that money for that day. But those are two of the funnest because guys are showing up. We're showing up for bragging rights.
Well, hey,
not so much just to win, you know,
prizes.
We'll talk
a little bit more about that in our next segment, so just stay tuned. We'll be right back talking more about fishing and some of these terms we like to fish. I'm Tommy Bench, and this is Wild at Heart.
Now, back to Wild at Heart with the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond on ESPN 107.3.
Welcome back. I'm Tommy Bench, and you're listening to Wild at Heart. This segment of our show is brought to you by Colton Steakhouse and Grill in Rolla, where we know what's at stake. I love steak, by the way, especially Colton steak. Hey, we're back talking about fishing stories. We've been talking, telling fishing stories this whole show pretty much. We've got Seth Turner here right in the studio with us, as well as the co-host, Jerry Cook. But we've been talking about some awesome stories of big, giant smallmouth, lost brown trout on a fly, giant largemouth that was hand-lined in. You know, I mean, just amazing stories a lot of people don't get to hear about. They just see the results, and but not how it happened. So anyway, we was talking about a big smallmouth story. I laid my hand open. We're fishing the Walmart tournament. Hooked this big smallmouth. Got it in the boat. We ended up winning TVs. It's pretty cool. It's fun. But, you know, we was talking about these Walmart tournaments, ALS, Fishing for a Mission, and then the Relay for Life. That's the same one, isn't it? Relay for Life?
Fishing for a Mission and then the Walmart tournament. Those are the two that I think of. Is
yeah, I
one?
Think the Fishing for a Mission is the Relay for Life. That's
okay,
the Relay
maybe it
for
is.
Life.
Maybe
yeah.
it is.
Anyway, just wanted to put that out there. That's for a good cause, you know, very good cause, and I always encourage everyone to donate, or not necessarily donate, but I mean your money is going to a good cause, and then of course you have the prizes you can win and some money. But anyway,
and you know, in fly fishing we do a lot of good things too. For example, Healing Waters for wounded veterans.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that.
Reeling for Healing, which is for cancer research and all for women primarily there. But the Healing Waters, of course, is near and dear to my heart. Being a veteran myself, I like to see those projects take place to help out our wounded warriors.
Yeah, for sure. Anything to help out our wounded warriors or veterans is always a great thing. You know, with myself living so close to Fort Leonard, where I was born and raised there, and so I see a lot of military families come in and out. I grew up with a lot of military families. My best friend I met him because of the military. Mm-hmm. You know, his dad was stationed there and they ended up staying there. So, you know, they're very dear to my heart. And I've got a lot of, you know, Daniel Barnes is a good friend of mine. He's an amputee. He's got a good sense of humor about it. Matter of fact, I can't wait to have him on here. And he loves the outdoors.
Yeah.
Loves it. He loves fishes, hunts. You know, of course, he wears a life jacket, you know, mm-hmm. be safe about it. But, you know, anything that can help those people, I'm all for it.
And these programs today are, you know, are really good programs. When I came home, we didn't have those kind of things going on. There were no programs to help out veterans or wounded warriors at that time.
Yeah.
And these programs have come about really as a result of our conflicts in Afghanistan and Iraq. And I'm proud to see that today's veterans are treated entirely different than if you will, my generation of veterans.
Well, that's good. You know, that's a good thing. And I'm, you know, like I said, I grew up around military. I still live there, so, and I completely understand. You know, as far as that goes, and you know, like just like the Mike Unruh we had in here from the Fallen Outdoors, same thing.
That's, right.
They're strictly 100% based around taking a veteran out hunting or fishing.
Yeah,
but hey,
and
I
support that entirely
for sure. No, for sure. But hey, since we got three of us here that love the outdoors, and fishing is one thing we all have in common for sure. You know, Seth and I do a lot of things, but we're specifically talking about fishing in this instance. It don't have to be smallmouth or trout or crappie. Is there one story you guys can talk about that is like one of your most memorable catches? You know, because we was talking about how we hang line that one. That was memorable to me. I'm not the one that hooked the fish, but I was part of helping getting it in the boat. And it, you know, Bill will tell you that. Get it in the boat. That's what I always say. Get it in the
boat. If someone told me that story, I wouldn't believe them.
Yeah.
But it happened to us, and we got it on GoPro.
And we got it recorded.
So have you ever jumped in the water after a fish?
I have.
Okay.
I truly have. I've jumped in the water after a fishing pole, too.
Yeah, I'll bet.
Yeah, I've done that. So, yeah, there were some funny stories like that. It's funny because my buddy Jeff Danielson and Larry Franklin, sorry, I was thinking. Anyway, there it's like an annual deal where one of them or both of them gets knocked in the water almost every tournament. Well, I ride with them on there, and of course, if we beat them, I get to mouth them. It's a great ride for me because I get to mouth them if they beat us. It's the opposite. I never hear the end of it. But anyway, I'm like, you seriously fell in the water? Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yep.
Can I tell you another salmon fishing story?
Sure.
I tell you what.
Was you there?
Oh, absolutely. I was the victim of
if
you will. So I'm telling one on myself now. But my buddy Mike and I were up in Wisconsin salmon fishing again. And I'm standing on this rock. And I hook into a salmon. And Seth, as you probably know, those things come out of the water like a rocket. Mm-hmm. And if you have any slack on their line at all, they're gone because they have a very bony jaw, and you've got to set that hook aggressively. So, boy, I wheel around, and I yank back on that 8-weight rod, and that fish comes out of the water like a rocket, and he wasn't stopping. And I turn to my left, you know, so I've got a little better angle and a little better view and how to work this fish. And then I was also thinking, how am I going to get this thing in? He is huge. And I take a step back, and I fall off the rock, and I land on my back. Well, needless to say, the fish is gone, and I can't move. And my buddy Mike and I had planned on staying in Wisconsin another day, but we ended up coming home early because he literally had to help me get dressed the next morning, help me get my boots on. There was no way I could put waders on.
So you really hurt yourself.
Oh, I'm telling you. I actually thought I'd broke some bones I'd get back home and go to the VA in Columbia. And they got me right in. They said, no, you didn't break any bones, but you sure messed up some muscles.
Wow.
But that was one really nice salmon.
Well, I'll tell you a story. This didn't happen to – it happened with me, but it wasn't me. So I can laugh about it because it was Jack Uxas who it was. We went down. We was talking about – I remembered it. We was talking about that river. It's a St. Francis.
Yeah. Yeah,
St.
Another
Francis
river, yeah.
And a Castor. Yeah. So we're down there, and there's all these giant rocks that's run Elephant Rock, and how we're catching these fish is we got a backpack and some tackle and just like one rod, and we're basically just walking, jumping from rock to rock and fishing these pools. Well, you know as well as I do, the water hits these pools and it becomes slick, you know, from the moss and whatnot. Well, Jack catches a nice one, the biggest one he caught all the whole time, and I've got this recorded, by the way. So
watch
there's
this.
Yeah, have you seen it? So
I've watched it.
He's running around trying to catch this fish. Or trying to fight this fish, and he slips on one of the rocks. I mean, slips and right straight, falls flat on his back on one of these boulders while he's fighting the fish. Of course, now it's like, oh, are you okay? And he's like, I'm all right. You still got the fish? I still got him. I couldn't believe it. He didn't, you know, let go of it, but ended up landing the fish. It was a nice, by far the biggest one we caught there. But
why is it those things always happen with the biggest fish? Have you ever noticed that?
I don't know. If maybe you just
dramatic effect.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's what it was. It was a nice
fish. Was Jack sore the next day?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he was. He's the same age as me, so he ain't no spring chicken anymore. We're always joking around about that. But, no, I've had some times where I've had a couple backlashes with my bait caster, and if you get it all bird nest, what they call it, the line gets kinked in certain spots, and you fix it, and you do what you may do. It don't happen very often, but you try to really get a long cast out of it, throw it in the wind, and it happens. I know a time when I set the hook on a fish, and it broke way up on my line. I could see the line, but I knew it was solid at the first hook set. So I jumped in and grabbed the line, and I actually still ended up catching the fish. It's not like it was no 4-pounder like we're talking about, but it was 16, 17-inch fish, you know. Still
that's
a nice fish.
Still a nice smallmouth, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Still a nice smallmouth. I mean, it's still a nice smallmouth, but – you know, that's about the most dramatic I can say was setting the hook on the hook set, basically, and it broke. I remember it breaking somewhere in between my spool, my reel, and the end of the rod because the line broke, and as the rod went back, it just come out and was laying on top of the water, and, you know, I just jumped in and, you know, the river
did it break on? Did it break on one of those kinks?
One of those kinks from where I backlashed it in the past. It may have even been a week before, you know, but, you know, you get a backlash and it kinks all together. And you know what I'm talking about. That's what it was. It just had a bad spot in the line, and I'm too cheap to change it because that fluorocarbon is $120 for them big spools. And so, yeah, that's my dramatic fishing story. Oh, I've caught some fish over some logs, like multiple logs.
We fly fishermen, when we kink a tippet or a leader, either one,
retie.
It's time to get rid of it.
You don't have much to get away with.
Yeah,
that's right. We don't have as much money invested as you do in a
might just be a little smarter than me.
That's like me with my finesse gear. I mean, you nick it up much, you better be retying.
Absolutely, yeah. It's a good break there. Yeah.
Exactly, and you better be safe than sorry is the main thing.
You don't have
retie.
As much leeway.
You hook into that fish of a lifetime, I guarantee you that's where it's going to break.
Well, yeah.
That's exactly right. And you know, but hey, we've had just an awesome time on the show tonight talking about all these fishing stories and Taney Como trout and Frank and Frankie and big smallmouth and hand lining fish and breaking off and jumping in the water. But, you know, it's been a blast. I just wanted to thank Seth Turner for being on the show. But
I'm not done talking yet.
Well, we're going to have to continue on maybe next show, so I'll have to have you back. But, hey, folks, Wild at Heart is heard every Wednesday afternoon from 4 to 6 and Sunday morning from 8 to 10. The show is produced in the studios of ESPN 107.3 in Raleigh and engineered by the one and only John Francis. We'd like to thank our guest today, which I did, Seth Turner. And don't forget, you can always listen to a podcast of this show. Just go to our website at ESPN1073.com. Click Programming and Wild at Heart. I'm Tommy Bench.
And I'm Jerry Cook.
Thanks for joining us.
Wild at Heart on ESPN 107.3, powered by Cowtown USA, Colton Steakhouse and Grill, J. Cook Fly Rods, The Outdoor Superstore, Advanced Performance Shooting, Missouri Trappers Association, and Trout & Sons. Hear the latest in outdoor recreation from the Ozarks and points beyond. Wild at Heart, 4 p.m. Wednesdays and 8 a.m. Sundays on ESPN 107.3.